Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vale, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is the Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet.
Here we are. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Emily.
What is new and exciting with you? We always talk about what's new and exciting with me.
Well, I'm wearing a ball cap today because I was going to get my hair done. And that's, you know, when I say that, I mean my head shaved on Saturday, but there was a big storm that hit us and we hunkered down, and it was kind of a nice chance to just, you know, kind of be together as a family. So it was, you know, it kind of forced get everything cleaned up around the yard and all that kind of stuff. And thankfully it wasn't too bad for us. I have some friends, you know, in common that, you know, still without power and stuff in Halifax. And, you know, so we're pretty fortunate, but that's kind of top of mind for me is, and you know, just the small little hurdle where I didn't get to go to the barber and get my head shaved, you know? So that's, you know, when you ask me what's going on, that's going on. But outside of that, I mean, man, we're back in the full swing of things, kids in school, you know, things happening. And we're doing interviews, which is always fun. And we got a really cool guest lined up, don't we?
We do. Yeah. So Kurt is here today. Kurt, welcome to the Boiling Point podcast.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kurt Goddard. I'm the executive director of legal and public affairs at an organization called Inclusion Canada. So it's a national nonprofit human rights organization that works on behalf of persons with intellectual disabilities and their families. And a lot of our work is with the federal government, a little bit at the international level. And we are part of a global federation, but a provincial federation. So you may have heard of our provincial affiliates like Inclusion New Brunswick or Community Living Ontario. I live here in Fredericton. I'm a licensed lawyer in Ontario, so I work remotely. A lot of our organization is remote. And I have been in the disability movement for over a decade in various forms. I left to do some legal training. And I that's really the professional piece of me right now. So unless I've missed something, but so
what's the unprofessional piece?
There's a lot of, I like to trail run. There's a lot of unprofessional pieces. I was trying not to bring them up on this interview, but that's really, there you go.
Yeah, I love it. And yeah, so as you all now know, Kurt and I met on the trails through the trail running community. And I'm always I have so many questions for you. And it's either like I send you my like Q&A interview just because I want to get to know you more, or I bring you on the Boiling Point so everyone can know what it is that you do, because I am very fascinated by what you do. And you and Dave have already made that connection through the legal affairs, and Dave's father is a retired judge. He has been on the podcast, and I felt that this would be a really great connection. Yeah. So thanks for coming on here.
Thanks for having me. And Dave, you didn't follow in your father's footsteps.
Kurt, I saw how hard he was working and the hours and hours he was putting in, and my brother followed in his footsteps, became a lawyer, and was articling, and then was one of the big firms on Bay Street, and then said, "The hell with this! This is tough." And all respect to lawyers, but just the business model is really tricky. But having said that, I have a coaching business. Emily and I work together in vision coaching, and it just connects with lawyers. But I remember getting out of the executive coaching course at Royal Roads University, and I was talking to my father, who Emily's met, who's been on the podcast. I said, "Dad, You know who could really benefit from coaching? I said, lawyers. And he said, yeah. No lawyer would hire a coach. Now, this is going back 20 years almost, right? And as a result, I started saying, well, I disagree. I kind of, let's test this out, right? More out of frustration that he would just dismiss it so easily. And then ironically, kind of shout out to him, we started working with tons of lawyers. And in fact, one of my very good friends who I'm sure you know, in this part of the world, Kelly Van Buskirk.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome.
He is amazing. He's an amazing human being. And he very openly talks about being kind of the first client. And I knew if I could give him a good experience, you know, or he could have a good experience being coached, that would just open the doors wide open. And it has. And Kelly will invite us to speak to, you know, he teaches law at UMB. I mean, he's very prolific, right? He's everywhere. I expected that you probably would know each other. But Kurt, my question for you is, you talked about the disability movement and being involved in it for a decade. And I'm just curious, like, what was the, what are the origin story there? Like, how did that all happen?
Yeah, totally. I'm even more nerd. If Kelly Van Buskirk is watching this, I gotta be.
Oh, he is for sure.
He's been a past, smart individual.
He's been a past guest. And great.
But no, really, I didn't go straight to law school. That wasn't really the dream growing up. I'm a bit of a bleeding heart and just wanted to help people, like a lot of people. And I ended up in St. John. I worked at a middle school in the north end that's now closed on a crime reduction project. And then from that project, I was hired at the New Brunswick Association for Community Living as a manager of family supports, where we had this little crew of, I think it was four of us, basically doing advocacy for families and persons with intellectual disabilities all over the province. And there was a particular situation in St. John. I can't go into too many of the details, but there was a young couple who both happened to have intellectual disabilities, and the government or social development specifically was basically taking their kids away from them by solely on the virtue of their disability. And it I was so shocked. I was like, I had never, it just changed my whole worldview that there's this kind of presumption that these folks would be were incompetent. This is a terrible word, but it was so, but they're lovely. The social development did give them a chance. And so we got involved in the situation, and it came to a point where I needed to find a lawyer, and I couldn't find a lawyer anywhere or find a lawyer that would really gut the situation and that would work for a low bono or pro bono. To the point, and this wasn't a situation that just resolved overnight. Like I believe that family was involved in different types of support for years, I think it was a positive outcome in the end. But I eventually left, inspired to go to law school, inspired to learn more about legal capacity and the exercise of legal capacity, and so. If you're unfamiliar with that, that's a lot of us in Canadian society and around the world take it for granted that the law views us as having rights to make decisions about their lives. But it's embedded in our law that there's a whole group of people who this is stripped from by virtue of their disability. And so that's kind of what propelled me to go to law school, is because I couldn't find a lawyer. And I just started thinking about the situation and this problem, and my brain wouldn't let it go. And I eventually made my way back to the disability movement. And I'm here with you today.
Wow.
Yeah. Go ahead. Wow is right. It's interesting. Kurt, on our last episode, we had a lady, Nancy, on, and she was just speaking about how, for her, which she owns a business, that around like seeking opportunity and seeing something that wasn't there and that wasn't okay and taking action to do something about it and fill that void. And here you are now, how many years ago? And like you are, yeah, that person that like you saw this area that you just knew, it sounds like within your heart, within your soul, was not okay. And wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the problem's not gone. There's issues with legal capacity all over the planet. But there's some neat things going on in Canada and there's some neat things going on in New Brunswick. So I'm still hopeful and it's neat to be at this intersection right now.
Can you speak to some of those things?
Yeah, totally. So it's basically that all people have the right to supports in their decision-making. And that's those supports aren't recognized by the law. So this could be somebody who might need a trusted family member or some particular assistive tech to help make a decision. And really the core, like a lot of the issues with the law happen in decisions around personal finance, in health decisions, banking, finance and property, and things like these core areas of our life that people take for granted. So there have been little movements, and we are in a federation, and so all the provinces have different laws that regulate a lot of this, a lot of these provincial issues, thanks to our constitution. And we happened in New Brunswick. There was a really progressive piece of legislation passed in the spring on supported decision making. It's not perfect, but I have a lot of hope for it. We're still watching how this is going to unfold, how lawyers are going to be trained, what this means for some of the I talk about discrimination being embedded. So in our legal system, it's kind of, we're in a common law system. Dave probably has heard this all so many times before, but it's kind of like our actual written laws are the top of an iceberg and everything under the water is the common law. And a lot of that discrimination is under the surface in this particular instance, in the form of a test called the Understand and Appreciate test. So the law for a lot of different things will allow you to make a decision if you understand and appreciate the consequences of that decision. And for all kinds of different reasons, some people can't meet that test without supports. And so in New Brunswick, they've changed the law, which is a major advancement, like across the, like this is kind of a really exciting thing for the global community to see what's going on here with this and how it's going to unfold and the materials and everything that's going to be built to make this work here. So
Kurt, actually, you know what, there's a couple of things going on in my brain as I was listening to you. The first was, isn't it amazing when you can live in a jurisdiction, like a relatively small place, but you can actually be working towards or with or see something happening that can have, can make ripples across the globe, you know, like in other words, you don't have to be in a huge kind of city. I mean, that's pretty cool to hear that this little province in New Brunswick has actually changed, you know, some law that actually can support people, you know, around this legal capacity.
Yeah, totally. And I'm moving around because I'm trying to practice active listening skills, but I'm getting excited because there's another area. So I was privileged to be once a year, I go down to the United Nations with our organizations to where they have a big conference under the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And this past spring, I was in the room watching a gentleman from the Commonwealth advocate to global state officials and UN officials about how there's a state or a jurisdiction, a province called New Brunswick in Canada that has allowed persons with inclusive educations and persons with intellectual disabilities can just go to school and not get segregated from the time they enter the school system, and how incredible this was and how it needs to be protected. And this is a guy like that's representing a Commonwealth group. And I'm like, oh, I wish people at home could hear this. This is so anyways, it was giving me chills. I was like on the side. I'm like, do I say anything? I'm like, I'm from New Brunswick. Anyways, at the same time, yeah, I was a little bit worried about it that particular week. There were some challenges on the home front on it, but I didn't want to burst the bubble. But yeah, in multiple areas, I feel like we are a precious jewel, and we don't realize, at least in terms of disability rights sometimes. And there's actual groups and delegations of people that come from Australia and Europe and all over to come and see what we're doing. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but it means like we've pushed it further than a lot of other states are across the planet.
What is it about the makeup of New Brunswick? Like, what would cause that? Is it, having a champion of some sort? I mean,
yeah, there's some interesting folks that help push it here. I also think, like, I put this question back to you, like, the size of our province is really interesting. I don't know. It's like a miniature version of, it's just a good place to test things out and to push things, and people know each other, which is good and bad. But I feel like it's easier for people to work together and get things done in a smaller jurisdiction. And we happen to have some really great thinkers and advocates and parents and self-advocates that happen to reside in New Brunswick that were able to push this further than other places.
How long has that been, Kurt, since people with disabilities were able to, like, being a part of the school system, not being segregated?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not the greatest historian on it, but it hasn't been that long in the history of our province. And I'm afraid to give numbers. What can I say about how long it has been? I will say it's been long enough that an interesting thing that has happened is that our students that go to school now expect inclusion, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
There's a structural change that people know that this is the right thing to do, and you shouldn't just exclude a segment of the population from your world like that. When some of that happens, you're probably familiar with the concept of social capital and how that is so important to the life course of a person. And when you push somebody out and exclude them for their whole life, like, you lose friends, you lose opportunity for work, you lose community. Like, anyways, I think the neat thing that has happened is that we at least have a generation of students that whether they realize it or not, it's the norm, and that they unknowingly may expect this to be a part of life.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. I have a sister who has Down syndrome, and she's 45, and she went through the public school system. But my mom, like, when she was first going into school, the school system wanted to send her away to the different school. My mom fought and was like, no, put her in the classroom. And she was so high functioning and like reading and writing and like keeping up with all of these kids. And what I notice now when you saying that about like kids and about school systems now is seeing my nieces and my nephews and just seeing them how, whether someone has an intellectual disability or a physical disability, that everyone is the same. There's something different. Like, it is so much more just normalized.
Yeah.
And just seeing people for the people. And it's just such a beautiful thing and incredible that it is like New Brunswick is just kind of leading.
So, if you don't mind me asking, your parents had the fight. Were they successful in getting her into the system?
My mom was, yes. Okay. Yeah. Not without a lot of challenges, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's been like, gosh. 38 years ago now. But yeah.
There's a parent in Bathurst, and she's very lovely. Her name's Diane Cormier Northrup. And she shows this picture. She had, she has two children with intellectual disabilities. And she shows she was able to, One child was excluded from the classroom and the other child was included from the get-go. And she shows their graduation pictures. And it's like, you can see the difference. Like, one, her daughter's in the center with everybody around her. And the other one, the son who was excluded, his life is like off to the side. It's just, anyways, I think we take that for granted here. And it's actually this precious jewel where parents around the world come here and are like, how did you do it? And how can we have that? And yeah, I think we should be proud of it. I think we need to protect it. I think we can make it a lot better. And that's cool to hear that you're a sibling.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of siblings and I learn a lot from siblings. And there's like this whole sibling movement that I've been learning about over the like last few years.
Well, and like you say too, and speaking about the, like the iceberg, and there's the, you know, the laws at the top 10%. And I work with clients in not-for-profits with, for people with disabilities. And so much of the challenges are around what the legal rights are. And constantly navigating that and the confusion and.
Yeah. Like how can if your sister wanted to sign a lease, are they going to give her a hard time just because she has a disability? And how can you be there to support her in that? That these are kind of all centered back to legal capacity, and that this kind of like confusing right is the heart of unlocking a lot of the rights in the UN Convention on the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So it's a very important thing. And we're at a moment in New Brunswick that we could do this really well, and we could really push the planet on this issue.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I want to go back to something you said earlier. I'm just kind of curious, and I've had an experience where you know, something's happened and you the language you use, and I would use the same language, is it changes your worldview. Right. And you were describing that earlier, you know, and it changed it in such a way that inspired you to, it sounds like, you know, kind of the trajectory of your life might have shifted a bit. But like, what was, you know, that worldview and the adjustment based on that experience of seeing these two, this couple discriminated against? Because I know for me how disruptive the worldview change can be.
Yeah. So, sorry, Dave, like what was that change like, or how?
Yeah, like, no, like, well, when your worldview changes, like when something, an event happens, something happens and it shifts your view of, you know, like you think the world, or at least this is how I interpreted you saying it.
Yeah.
You kind of see the world in a certain way and then something happens and you go, wait a sec, this isn't, I didn't think the world was lined up. Yeah. Like, this is completely like what, this is foreign to my thinking. Like, I can't believe this happens. You know, I don't know if that was what happened for you, but I mean, in my experience, and I'm just curious about just what happened for you, you know, as you know, what, at least my interpretation of it is you saw what you thought the world was through the lens of these people and said, how can this be? And just what that, you know, what that was, experience was like for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And honestly, that year was preempted by some, like, a significant loss and trauma. And so this was, this whole year was a rupture. And then you spend time being like, there's also lessons from that kind of rupture in your life. And when you have a worldview change, that you're like, you have to learn about patience, because a lot of people don't have this worldview, and you have to learn about empathy, and you're like, oh no, there's a reason why they might not have this particular perspective. And you have to be creative on how you're going to advocate and how you're going to change the things that you've woken up to, or the view has changed. Totally, Dave. It's not a, like, I wish it was just like, oh great, I had this amazing revelation, now everything's perfect. It's like, no, that's when the lessons start coming. That's when,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess I was kind of curious about that, because that can be, in my experience, can be profound. And just when you go, what? Like, it doesn't work this way. And I just assume that this is the way things are. And then something happens where you go, wait a sec, this doesn't make sense. This isn't right.
Did you have any deep lessons about when you get the new lens in life? Like any insights of what you should do or not do?
Well, I'm going to turn that back to what I heard. You actually said it inspired you to learn more, to change, you know, to shift your career, to get into the work you did. And to me, if I thank you, role model what people should do. And I guess when I was asking you about, you know, kind of the origin story, I was making an assumption that, you know, something, you know, was like something within your family or whatever, but you saw injustice, or at least, you know, and made a change. And that's, I mean, to me, that's pretty inspiring, you know, to change the trajectory of your career and that sort of thing. And do the work you did, you're very, you know, sounds like it supported you really kind of doubling down and committing to something that you felt had, this has to be, we have to change this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like, for me, I've always just followed my curiosities too. I know a lot of people might not necessarily take that, but I've always just followed the path of the curiosities and things have turned out okay. So, you know, the money has shown up and, you know, I've had to shelter over my head from following these curiosities. So there's a little bit of that too. Like once I, like my brain encountered this problem was like, I had to follow it. I had to be like, what is this? So there's a little bit of that too. Yeah.
You think that's just innately in you? Like looking back in your life, have you always been that way?
Totally. Totally. I am still like that. Like I have to go down the rabbit hole, right? I have to be like, okay. And you follow it. I mean, it can be disruptive too. But I don't know. I generally find like there's a theme and there's a consistent thing and you find some focus and you find some passion about, but at the beginning you're like, I'm like, what am I doing? Anyways. I'm blushing about my curiosity. What's going on here?
No, I love it.
And
it is just that, like, when we can stay curious about things and curious about things just a little bit longer, where it can lead us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like there's something, I think that like that curiosity just like shows that there's something deeper within us and how quickly we can shut that curiosity down. And it's like, you know, I think of like for you and I and like trail running, it's a curiosity of like, well, where does that trail go? Or I can run 20K, can I run 200K? If I can do this, if I can like, and so it's like, if these changes can happen in New Brunswick, where else can these changes happen on that global level?
I felt that actually we were trail running in Quebec in this really interesting nature reserve. And I felt that we were going way too slow. The mountain was a lot bigger than what we thought. And we had reached, you know, you should have a good cutoff time or turnaround time when you're hiking and whatnot. And I just remember the group of people having such a difficult issue with this because it was in their nature to be like, oh, but like, don't we want to see what's next? Don't we? Like, we had to like really reason it out and be like, okay, like, you know, the devil we know, let's go back. This is a good decision. And I was like, oh, this is a dangerous group. Like, we all want to know what's next and we're all too curious about. I totally understand. Do you think everybody has that curiosity or?
No, I don't. I mean, I think people, for some reason we can lose it as we, you know, I think it's certainly, in my opinion, is this really, I love how present it is in children. And then I don't know what happens, but you can lose touch with it almost, right? Like in my own personal experience and in the work we do, Emily and I do in coaching, curiosity is so important because you know, on the surface, you hear something and you can quickly judge what you're hearing without really understanding. And again, let's go back to the iceberg, you know, like what's underneath that? Where's that coming from? What's that about? You know, all those sorts of things. And it sounds to me like the work you do, you know, is important for you to probably be surround yourself with a bunch of people like on that trail run in Quebec, where what is around the next corner? What, you know, because You know, how far can we push this? You know, who can we bring to see this model? And, you know,
and I don't know. Like, I also feel a frustration when I encounter someone who doesn't, or I perceive not to have it. I'm like, how do I get this plane? Like, what do I do? What's the secret sauce? And maybe you have some of those tools through all your years of coaching to do that, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, all of those things that it's like, you know, I believe that like we are born curious. Cause like you said, like you look at children, they want to know everything. They want to see everything. They want to touch everything. They want to taste everything. Right. And then it's almost like this fear and the self-doubt and all of these worldly things then come and kind of like crush us down a little bit. And that fear of failure and that fear of like, oh, if we go this far and we've got too far and then we turn around and we can't make it, like just all of that type of stuff. But I think that it is something that, like, much like confidence, it can be built upon.
Yeah.
It can be pulled back in. And that is a process, but that it really can get to it to the point that, like, you're just like, you're constantly curious. It's like, that's that, like, drive, that excitement, that, like, oh, let's go in everything we do because we're so curious. Kurt, I know that you do some work over in Rwanda with Shout Canada. Can we talk about that?
Oh, speaking of following curiosities, I'm no longer involved, but I did years ago, an acquaintance, a pal, he had really been inspired by the March of Remembrance of Hope, which is kind of like this Holocaust study trip across parts of Germany and Poland. And he came back and he's like, he had a Rwandan friend and he's like, I think I could build the equivalent program for Rwanda. And he went off and he traveled around Rwanda with his pal and started to learn about the country and was like, oh yeah, there's something here that people need to know about. And he came back and he took a few more people. And then I said, I'd like to do that. He had a little application process and I put a little application in and off we went, just to kind of a motley crew of 10 people to Rwanda and just like hired a bus and they had a little bit of, so I got to know the country a little bit. I met my wife who's from Newfoundland on the trip.
Oh no way.
She was a, and then I came back and I was like, I really got out a lot. This pushed me. I'd love to try to lead this thing, which is really like, there's no money. Like this thing is just, it was for university students and we'd plan it and we'd be calling Rwanda, trying to sound official and get into the UN and get into the presidential palace and things like that. And I went back and I led it and my wife led it. And then we were on the board. It just became this kind of this neat experience that shaped us and brought us together. And just pushed me in terms of like, how do you lead in a foreign place in weird circumstances when everybody's exhausted to do this safely and it's kind of risky? So lots of lessons to come out of that. And speaking of lenses and perspectives of being in rural Rwanda or down on the border with like the DRC and stuff and just encountering different ways of life and how that country has changed and to deal with this like massive societal trauma and how anyway and even like how their justice system dealt with it is so fascinating. So I was involved. I did have this really amazing and the program lives on. It's incredible. It's like there is no money. It's just people who've had this incredible experience wanting to share it and are passionate enough to like figure out the logistics every year and take this risk and go and do it. And so there's still a website, showcanada.ca, it's like young professionals. And I think they run it every spring. And anyways, pretty neat. You also get the like this network of people who are just as like intensely curious and like wanting adventures. So you kind of get to meet a lot of like really fantastic human beings from across Canada.
Yeah, love it, Kurt. I love your passion. And so you speak about all these like exciting things that Inclusion Canada is doing. Is there anything that our listeners should be keeping an eye out for or looking forward to? I think that there is something happening coming up.
Totally, yeah. So if you're curious about our work, so again, National Human Rights Organization advocates on behalf of persons with intellectual disabilities and their families. Check our website at inclusioncanada.ca. We have a number of strategic priorities. I've talked about legal capacity. That's my area of work, but we work on inclusive education, housing, employment. We have a flagship program with CASDA, the Canadian Autism Spectrum Society, and it's called the Ready, Willing, and Able program that helps match people with employers. But if you want to learn all about this, we have a luncheon, an Inspiring Inclusion luncheon coming up on November 15th at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Atlantic. It's very short. It's only 40 minutes long. It's virtual. You can find out. There'll be lots of stuff coming out on our socials, or you can send me a note at kgoddard@inclusioncanada.ca, and I can get you the information. We'd love to see people out there if they want to learn more about our work. And it kind of showcases the actual stories, the actual testimony of people who've been involved in with our work on the ground.
Yeah, wonderful. I look forward to that.
And what would you encourage listeners to, obviously, I think that would be a good education on November. You said November 1st, I believe, right?
November 15th, sorry.
15th. That's my bad. I'm sure you said that. Yeah. I just copied it down wrong. For the casual listener who's going, I didn't really know any of this, but I'm curious, right? Something about this conversation, curiosity has tapped into my curiosity. Is there anything out there that you think people should be exposed to that might give them a better perspective? You know, maybe someone that doesn't have a personal perspective but is interested in learning more.
Yeah, I think totally, because this can be. We do tours that would introduce people at least at the national level. A lot of our provincials, so depending where you are, our provincials vary in size and kind of the nature of what they do. But a lot of them do tours that introduce you to their work and what's going on in their province and their priorities of the province. So I'd encourage you to look at, and you can find this all through our website, what your provincial association is. Other than that, like if people are really like, I want to know about this, maybe this is a bit too theoretical, but other than our website, like learning about inclusion in the disability movement, let's say you really want to know about how do I implement a right in my company, or like how do I do this thing? I would say start like give the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities a read. It's a really progressive, excellent document. It's Canada has signed it. Canada has ratified it. That means we have committed. At the country, the government of Canada is committed to make it happen, make it a reality, despite our federation. And those are the things that we as citizens should be upholding our government to those standards. And so if you're curious about a standard or you're curious about, like, anyways, there's all kinds of oodles of stuff like that. If you want to learn about inclusion, go to our website. That will take you down the inclusion. But if you really want to know about this human rights framework and what Canada has committed to and what we're pushing in our day-to-day work, check that out. Just a quick Google search will bring it up for you. I'll stop there give too many things.
Very helpful. Well, I this has been a joy meeting you. Like, I love your passion for what you do, and just the intellectual curiosity is like, it's inspiring. It makes me think of like, well, how much do I actually know about this, and how much should I know about this? And maybe I should learn more about that. Well, not maybe, I should learn more about this because, it's important and, it can impact any one of us at any point. Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're New Brunswick, like, I think you like look into some of this stuff. Like it's really neat what advocates have done here. And we are really privileged to And I know there's always a lot of work to be done, but we do have some really precious things that should be protected and that are often under attack from different entities that might not understand. And anyway, so yeah, I totally follow that curiosity. Let me know if I can help you out anyway.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kurt. And it honestly has been a pleasure and a pleasure for me to be able to get to know you more and what it is that you are doing and work that is certainly near and dear to my heart for personal reasons and professional reasons and just the need for it. Thank you for all that you are doing, not just in Fredericton and New Brunswick, but across the entire globe. And at the end of our Boiling Point episodes, we always do, Dave and I, a takeaway of what we're really, what's like, what kind of one thing, although sometimes we get a lot of them, we always get a lot of them, but we try and narrow it down. One big takeaway. And, you know, right from the beginning of you talking about just the things that New Brunswick is doing and this thing around like celebrating our progress and celebrating those things that have happened. And for you to hear that like New Brunswick was the change maker in that is that like we can hear that, but that like to really then take the time to actually recognize and celebrate that and recognizing those accomplishments, because that is what inspires us and motivates us to keep going. So taking that time to just say like, yes, we are doing good things, because it can be so easy to get bogged down on the negative and maybe all the things that aren't working. So that is my big takeaway from my conversation with you. Yeah. Dave, what do you got?
I'm going to go back to the opportunity we all have when something shifts our worldview. And I think there's a choice, right? And sometimes the choice is, maybe someone else do something about this, or maybe if I just pretend I didn't hear it, it'll go away, or, you know, all these sorts of things. Or you can do what Kurt did, which is, actually, I want to make a difference. This is wrong, and I want to right this wrong. And, you know, that's a big agenda. That's a tough thing to do, but I just listening to it makes me think, you know, at a minimum, maybe I just ask some more questions and, you know, maybe it doesn't change my whole trajectory of my life, but I really found that insightful and inspiring. So thanks for that, Kurt.
Thank you both. Yeah, that's great. I do feel like there's a lot of people who think some of this stuff is like bailing out the ocean with a spoon, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's like a complex system. You just need sometimes it takes 100 levers you got to pull down. And then the machine turns on and change happens. That's always been my philosophy, and like figuring out where the levers are and getting other people to help you, you can actually turn the machine on and make change. So anyways, really appreciate this. Very lovely. Thanks for having me. I don't have an outro or the smoke machine's
we
not working.
Got you. Right now, we got you covered. I got the smoke machine. Yep.
Awesome. Emily's got the outro.
Cool. Okay.
So we are going to list all of Kurt's information and any extras that we discussed, including the information about the event on November 15th in our show notes. And the best place to find that is on our website at boilingpointpodcast.com. We are active on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We put this video version on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, the podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Kurt, it's been a pleasure. I'll see you on the trails, and I'll see you on November 15th for the event.
Awesome. Thank you both. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thanks, take care. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app or visit boilingpointpodcast.com for more.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
and thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.